Are you a procrastinator? I imagine if I gave time for everybody to answer that, we would have some who would immediately raise hands and say, I absolutely am. We're honest with ourselves. We recognize that about ourselves. We're the ones maybe who are doing taxes on the evening of April 14th. We're the ones who are putting things off. Or maybe some of us are those who would say, well, only in certain things, I'm a procrastinator. Might be mowing my yard, might be cleaning out my garage, might be any of those things. Some things I'm pretty good, other things, yeah, I procrastinate. My guess is that all of us would have in common that there's at least one thing in our lives about which we procrastinate. And if we ask the reason why, kind of the knee-jerk answer to that is, it's laziness. The reason we procrastinate is because we're lazy, but really that's not true. Some of the busiest people are the biggest procrastinators. Because to get yourself in a mindset of putting off something, you involve yourself in something different. You start doing something else so that you don't feel quite as guilty about not getting to whatever it is you're procrastinating. In fact, someone said, this is really what we call intentional avoidance. And I think that's really a better idea, that there's something we don't want to do. Maybe it's cleaning our garage. Maybe it's mowing the yard. So we find something else to fill our time with. Well, all those things are really neither here nor there. In the long-term span of things, we put off any of those, it's going to be okay. But what about spiritual procrastination? We take that same idea and we put it in the realm of delaying an action, spiritually speaking, because we intentionally want to avoid it. Now that changes categories completely. Because while cleaning out my garage might not be that big a deal, putting off something I need to do spiritually very much is. There are hymnists who have really admonished us in this regard. You might think of it like a hymn, today is the day of salvation, tomorrow may be too late. Or maybe we think about a hymn such as, almost persuaded, now to believe. Or we come to a third hymn that we're going to borrow from this morning that gives us a warning. And so George Root in 1878 wrote a hymn, and the last verse of that hymn says, why do you wait, dear brother? The harvest is passing away. Your Savior is longing to bless you. There's danger and death in delay. All three of the songs I referenced were written in the late 1800s. I haven't done a big study on this, but it seems like many of those songs that we kind of relegate to, quote, invitation songs, those that are highly admonitory in tone, come from that time period, which makes me curious. Was there something going on in the late 1800s that really had people thinking along these lines? Were they looking at a society that had become complacent? Were they looking at fellow Christians who had grown very content with where they are? I don't know. But what I do know is, no matter whether we were living in the late 1800s or the early 2000s, we can get very much into a procrastination state of mind when it comes to spiritual things. So this morning, what I'd like for us to talk about is why we do that. And how do we get away from it? All of us, I believe, fall into a temptation in some regard to put off things, spiritually speaking, that we know we need to be doing, but yet we're intentionally avoiding them. And that may be for you this morning, the very idea of becoming a Christian. It may be that you know absolutely what you need to do. It may be you know absolutely what's going to happen if you don't do it. But for some reason, you're punting. Or maybe it's those of us who are Christians and we know that there are sins in our lives that need to be dealt with. We need to get them taken care of. Maybe there's forgiveness that we need to ask for or that we need to extend. Whatever the case is, you answer that question in your own mind. And maybe you don't have any of those things, and that's fantastic if you don't. But for those who do, I believe we need to listen to this hymnist who tells us that while Jesus is longing to bless us, there certainly is danger and death in delay. So why is it that we get ourselves in that category? Let me start out with one that may sound a little strange, and that just simply being that I don't know God. I'm going to come back to that in just a second. But before I get really deep into this point, I want to tell you about a little research I did in preparation for this sermon. Again, not extensive, very surface. I went to Google and typed in, what is the leading cause of procrastination? What came up was a variety of answers. And somewhat unusual in questions like this, they were just really all over the board. I looked at several different lists of these, and some would have this, and some would have that, and some would have one in number one place, and maybe another list had it number five. But what I found is that there were really four things that all of these lists somewhere had in common. And in most of these lists, the two that you see on the screen here, perfectionism and fear of failure, were very near the top on all of them. Whether or not one or two, they were still within that top tier. And I found that really interesting. Laziness, nowhere around in this, but rather the idea that if I am going to do something, it must be done absolutely perfect. And I think the second one fits right hand in glove with it, that I'm not going to do something because of my fear that if I do it, I'm going to fail at doing it. Do you find yourselves in those categories? I'm not talking about in spiritual things. I'm talking about in other things of life where you have this ethic about you that says, I'm going to do it absolutely right and anything less is unacceptable, or maybe you never get involved in it because you say, the reason I'm not going to get involved in it is because I might not could do it perfectly. I might fail at it. So then I'm just going to leave it alone. Those are reasons that those who study such things give us for procrastination. But I believe both of these certainly fit in with spiritual things, and particularly in this idea of not knowing really who God is. Now, how can a people who know about God not know God? Well, let's address that. Sometimes, and I've heard this given before, a reason that someone might not become a Christian is this. The person says, well, I understand all this, but I'm really afraid that if I start, I'm not going to finish it. I'm going to quit. I know myself, and if I start this, then there's going to be this temptation to give up on it. So I'm going to wait. I'm going to put off becoming a Christian until I am confident that I can do it. Well, now let me say this. Jesus expects us to take this decision seriously. He very much expects us that when we begin this, to finish what we've begun. In fact, you might think about what Luke records for us when the Lord says this, for which of you desiring to build a tower does not first sit down and count the cost, whether he has enough to complete it? Otherwise, when he has laid the foundation and is not able to finish, all who see it begin to mock him, saying, this man began to build and was not able to finish. Well, the point's there. Even today, if somebody starts a building project and runs out of money, that person's going to get a reputation. Very unreliable, untrustworthy, didn't plan ahead. And so we understand that Jesus is saying, when you commit to me, don't do it in a frivolous manner. Don't do it with no thought whatsoever, but make sure that you're going to do what you start. Now, secondly, we might hear the excuse given or the reason given. I look at the Bible and I look at all of those rules in the Bible, which, by the way, is the wrong way of looking at the Bible, but let's follow this idea. I just look at all of these things, and I just can't do it. Well, once again, when we read the words of Jesus, there is an expectation that we are going to do what He has told us to do. He said, if you love me, you'll keep my commandments. So I don't want to minimize these things of finishing what we start, of looking at the commands of God and carrying out these commands. But how do we keep these things from feeding the procrastination to say, I'm just not going to do it today? I think one of the reasons that we find this to be a problem is because we misunderstand God. We do not have the richness of the full picture of who God is. That's for several reasons, one of which is faulty preaching. One of which is we get out of balance the teachings on the goodness of God and the severity of God. I've been preaching for quite a few years now, and I remember this especially being the case in the early days of my preaching, that the lessons that would get the most pats on the back would be the hardest lessons. The ones that might be designated more of the fire and brimstone kind of sermons, where you're standing up and very forcefully coming down on a sin or coming down on an attitude. And oftentimes, that kind of sermon is entitled sound preaching. One is viewed as a sound preacher, or a church is viewed as having sound teaching, if there is a very steady diet of that hardline preaching that's coming down on sin. Now, make no mistake about it, I am a firm believer that's needed. Why do I believe that? I look at the Sermon on the Mount. I read Matthew 23. I listen to the sermons of the Apostle Paul. There was times when they came down very strongly, when there were sins that needed to be dealt with. However, if that is the only part of the diet, there is nothing sound about that preaching. Because the attitude that's coming across is that God is against you. God is not very caring. He's not very loving. He's simply looking for you to fail, knowing that you will, ready to give up on you. Whether or not a preacher says that is regardless of the point. The attitude is that constant drumbeat that God's upset, that God's angry. Balanced preaching, sound preaching, if you want to use that term, is looking for both of those. To demonstrate who God is and how throughout time God has been so patient with humanity. Balancing that idea with, there will come a time when that patience ends. It's hard to get that right. I'll tell you that right off the bat. To get that balanced diet can be very challenging, but nonetheless, that's exactly what's got to happen. That's one reason. And thus, we think about this getting it out of balance, which leads us then to a second cause, and that's the lack of understanding of God's grace. When I don't understand that God is forgiving, when I don't understand that God is merciful, when I don't understand that God is willing over and over to allow His grace into my life, I'm never going to know who He is. I'm never going to understand what's going on with this. And consequently then, it becomes almost impossible for me to serve Him because I am so scared of Him. It leads to a spiritual paralysis. I am so fearful that I'm going to mess up that I just simply say I can't do it. I really appreciated Rick Lanning's Thursday night sermon. I guess if one was ranking sermons, I would put that one number one in the meeting. And it's because oftentimes when something's really on your mind is when you do the best at preaching at it. And he had this question that had kept him up all night. And in that great lesson on grace, after it was over, I wanted to tell him how much I liked it. And I said, you know the one thing I liked the most about it? There was nowhere in your sermon where you said, God is gracious, but... I think that's what I've heard most of my life. That when the preaching of God is done, there is always this constant fear that somebody somewhere in some remote corner is going to think I've gone off track because I believe in the grace of God. I don't see the Apostle Paul preaching that way. I don't hear him saying those things, writing those things. Certainly he deals with problems when one does exercise grace incorrectly, but you hear him saying, you are saved by grace. How then can I face the idea of being a servant of a holy, perfect God? It's by understanding that that holy, perfect God absolutely knows me to my very core and is going to help me in the areas where I struggle. And when I fall, He's going to extend His hand to pick me back up again if I'm willing. When I can see that God, I'm going to be much more convinced that He can make me what I need to be. That there is a Savior who is longing to bless me. And that's what I need to see. And to understand that there may be times I mess up, and there's ways of dealing with that, to understand there are times of weakness, and that God is going to help me through those, but to understand that if I am trying, God is saying, I am with you, and my grace and my mercy is with you as well. God doesn't want us to be spiritually paralyzed. God does not want us to view Him as someone who is so unwilling to sympathize with our weaknesses that He's ready to strike us at the drop of a hat. You want me to show you that from the Scripture? We could do it many times over, but simply listen to the Apostle Peter. The Lord is not slow to fulfill His promise, as some count slowness, but is patient toward you. But is patient toward you. Put your name there where the you is. Not willing that any should perish, but that all should reach repentance. You ever just given up on a job? Have you ever just said, okay, that's it. I can't take any more of it. I'm done. I'm out of here. I have. Maybe you're dealing with folks and nobody's cooperating, or maybe you're dealing with something and there's just a lot of problems and you just kind of give up. Aren't we glad God doesn't do that with us? And by the very fact that if you in this assembly this morning are sitting here living and breathing and heart beating and you have not given your life to God because of procrastination, God is patient toward you. Who knows but what the world is spinning today because God says, I'm going to give you one more opportunity. That's the God we serve. After all of these years of a sin-soaked, wicked earth, God says, I am patient because there are those on this globe that will come to me if I give them time. But now take that to the next level. And God says, when you take advantage of my gracious offer, then this is what you've got. Let us with confidence draw near the throne of grace that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in times of need. You ever just felt like the world is pressing in on you? Everything that could possibly go wrong is going wrong. You don't know how you're going to make it through the rest of the day, much less the rest of the year, and all of it's waiting on your shoulders. Listen to what God says. He says, I've got grace in abundance here. If you'll just come, you don't have to beg. Approach with confidence, and I have grace and mercy to help in times of need. Isn't that a beautiful picture? And that just completely negates the idea, I can't do this. Well, you're absolutely right. You can't do this, but God can. And God says, I am going to help you. I've got ample supply of this grace and mercy to help you. That's the God you and I serve. So then, let's not fall to this other cause to believe that God is against us. Or at the very least, that God is not for us. There are a lot of things in this life that you and I cannot explain. Let's stop trying. Let's stop trying to explain why somebody gets sick. Let's stop trying to explain why people have economic downturns. Let's stop trying to explain why bad things happen to good people. Most of the Bible, God is just simply saying, trust me. It may not look really good at the moment, but trust me, I've got it all under control. And this has been kind of a good week to accentuate that point, hasn't it? As we turn on the news and we see just turmoil all over the world and turmoil in our own politics, just simply to say, okay, God has got this under control. But how easy it is when something bad happens to us personally to say, you know, God could have stopped this. God could have cured me. God could have brought my wayward family member back home. God could knock out the bad guys so that people of faith aren't hurt. And if God's not willing to do that for me, then God doesn't love me. I would offer the same advice. Let's stop trying to figure all of that out. Let's stop trying to say, okay, well, A has got to link to B, has got to link to C, and rather exercise our faith when God says, look, there are going to be bad things in life. That's a constant. But you got bigger things going on. And what He says is, then you with confidence can draw near to that throne of grace, as we just talked about earlier. And then Romans 8:28, where God is saying, look, there are going to be times when you're going to think things aren't working out. And this is the passage that should be up there. But remember, all things work together for good to those who love the Lord. You know what we try to do with that? We'll try to take it and say, well, I fell down and broke my leg. Now let me see, how does that work together for those who love the Lord? That is not what the apostle is talking about. The apostle is saying, eternally speaking, if you trust God, everything works out for good. Are you sick? Do you have economic problems? Do you have family members who aren't treating you well? Okay, those things are going to happen. Deal with them as best you can. But have faith in me that when the last day comes, everything will be fine. That's how we keep ourselves from this level of procrastination. It's trusting that God knows what He's doing. Let me give you another. As we go back to our lists of reasons that people procrastinate, another that tended to make the top four was this one. It's a lack of focus. If you have ever in your workplace, or maybe just because you're this kind of person, ever taken a time management training course, a lot of times they're going to give you this grid, and I don't think I can get all the categories off the top of my head, but it's going to be something like unimportant, non-urgent. Important, but not urgent. Urgent, but not important. And then urgent and important. Maybe that's it. All right. And so what do we do first? It's whatever falls in the urgent and important category. Where then does our Christianity, our spirituality fall? It can fall into the category of important, but not urgent. Yesterday, if you're not a Christian, yesterday you made the decision not to become a Christian. The sun rose this morning, as it has every day of your life thus far. You didn't get something straightened out that needed to be straightened out yesterday. The sun came up this morning. Life continues. In other words, we would say, well, these things are important, but they're not going to be consequences in the immediate future. There are not things that are going to happen right now. Those are the things that we push to the back of the stove. Those are the things that we let simmer because they don't need our attention at the moment. And we might hear something like this, well, one day I'm going to get things right with God. One day that's going to happen. I have full plans to do that. Maybe it's when I'm 21. Maybe it's when I'm 41. Maybe it's when the kids are gone. Whatever. I'm going to get these things right with God. or maybe we have, and then we have a family, and we say something like, well, one day I'm going to get my family on a good spiritual course. When all the kids get in school, I'm going to have a lot more time. Don't believe that, parents. Yeah, I'm going to have all this more time to do things. Or when my kids are a little bit older and they can understand a little bit more about God, or when we're just not so busy because right now I need them on this team or that event or this class, but one day, it's not going to come. Because if we can kick the can one day, we can kick it another day. One of the reasons we procrastinate is because our lives are just filled with clutter. Why is it sometimes we find we can't get anything done? It's because we're trying to finish 50 things. That lesson applies to spiritual things too. And so we look at this, and we say, okay, well, I can't do it today, but future me can. So I'm going to punt the ball to future me. He can deal with this. That day may come, but it'll come with a lot of regret for the years that have been wasted. So then as we think about this, we need to realize Jesus warned about delaying. I am not going to try to go through Matthew 24 and 25. Justin did a great job Wednesday night making this point about the separating of sheep and goats, and that section fits in this greater unit of Matthew 24 and 25. But just kind of take a preview with me where he says, stay awake, for you do not know what day the Lord is coming. Therefore, you must be ready. Blessed is the servant whom his master will find doing when he comes. Watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour. After a long time, the master of those servants came and settled accounts with them. When the Son of Man comes in His glory, before Him will be gathered all the nations. And He will separate people from one another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. You think Jesus is making a point here? Do you think He's trying to say to us, don't consider service to me important but not urgent? Because you don't know when the bridegroom's going to come. You don't know when the master's going to return. You don't know on what day the Lord is coming. So the point is not to sit around and be scared about the judgment day. The point is we need to get ready. We need to be using what we've got, which means that we're going to view the present as extremely valuable. You ever notice how we talk about time in the same way we talk about money? You ever notice that? We save time. We spend time. We waste time. It's like a commodity that we talk about trading. Well, the Bible cues in on that, and the Apostle Paul says, walk in wisdom toward those who are outside, redeeming the time, economic term. He says, you got your valuable commodity here, and that's the minutes of the day. And what he's saying is, you need to live your life redemptively. You need to live your life where you're using your time with the most value possible. Why is that? So many times we mistakenly believe that we begin our eternal relationship with God at the point of our death. That is absolutely wrong. We begin our eternal relationship with God the day we become a Christian. That's when we develop this relationship that is never going to stop, that's never going to end. That's why Paul says, use your time wisely. And let me throw in with that also, it's the time that we're proving ourselves to be good stewards in preparation for our eternal partnership with God. When we get on the other side of things, you think we're going to sit around on clouds all day? You think that's all we're going to do? God's getting us ready now for the great things He has planned for eternity. He gives us a hint every now and again, but simply what He says is, I need to make sure that you're reliable. I need to make sure that you trust me enough to say, I'm going to give you what's of value to me now, rather than pushing it down the road and saying, I'll do it later. We need to understand that. No matter where we are in our walk with God. that every minute holds value. Because you and I can choose how to use our time. What we cannot choose is the amount of time. We may have years left. We may have minutes. Doesn't matter. What God is saying is, realize today is the day of salvation. And take that day of salvation and use it to your full potential as a child of mine. Let me give you the final reason of the top four. Perfectionism and the lack of not believing you can complete it, the lack of focus. The final one maybe fits in a little bit more to the stereotype. But it's not laziness, and that's why I didn't choose to use the word lazy here. We're going to talk about laziness, but I chose the word gumption. And maybe that's not a word that we use quite often, but it gives us the nuance we need. If you say somebody has a lot of gumption, it doesn't mean just energy. It means that you are taking what's at hand and you're using it for its greatest completion. When we think about that with procrastination, one of the four leading causes, top causes, is just simply a lack of energy. That may be from poor lifestyle choices. We're not treating our bodies very well, and therefore we don't have the energy to do something. Maybe what we said earlier, trying to do everything at the same time and wearing ourselves out. But I will go ahead and add, sometimes it is laziness. Sometimes the reason that we don't get done what we need to get done is because we just don't do it. We're just lazy. Solomon addressed that over in Proverbs chapter 24. When he pictures this guy walking by a field and he says, I passed by a field of a sluggard, by a vineyard of a man lacking sense, and behold, it was all overgrown with thorns. The ground was covered with nettles and its stone wall was broken down. Then I saw and considered it. I looked and received instruction, a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come upon you like a robber and want like an armed man. When do weeds take over the garden? Let me rephrase that. When do weeds begin to take over the garden? It's when the first one pops out of the ground and you choose to leave it. And you say, tomorrow I'll have a lot more energy and I'll get that weed. And the next week, day, there's two, and the next week, there's 20. Does that remind you of anything the Lord said? I don't know if Jesus was thinking about this particular part of Proverbs when he gave his parable of the soils, and he said, as for what was sown among thorns, this is the one who hears the word, but the cares of the world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and it proves unfruitful. Let the first spiritual weed come up in your life, and that's when you start giving up the garden. Let it remain, and it's going to produce more. And maybe it's going to be at some point I do it, but today I just don't have the energy. That's a dangerous thing. And so let me encourage us that we show the gumption we need in our relationship with God, that we take initiative. That when we see the problem at hand, when we see the challenge at hand, we deal with it. Not in the future, we deal with it now. We don't say, I don't have the time, the energy, I don't want to take the effort. Now is the time that we remove those things that promote spiritual procrastination. And dropping back to a previous point, it's a willingness to stick with God even when things don't make sense. I heard this little story about a man who went to a Jewish rabbi, and he told the rabbi, I'm just not sure about God. I don't know. I'm thinking about giving up my relationship with Him. And the rabbi said, well, you haven't stopped praying, have you? Do you understand what he said by that? The advice was solid. Doubts can come. They will for all of us. But we don't stop. We keep on praying. Because the only way we're going to approach God with that confidence to find grace and mercy is even in those dark times to at least keep the relationship with Him, though we can't understand what's going on. That takes gumption. The easy thing is to give up. The easy thing is to say, I've got other things to do. And finally, let me say this. If it's laziness that's causing the problem, we got to get over it. There are a lot of fine, fine workers out there who began their work careers as lazy folks. But they had a motivator. Somebody who got after them, trained them, taught them how to get up in the morning, taught them how to do a day's work. Laziness can be overcome. But it's a matter of trusting that God is saying, I will reward the faithful, not those who cast me aside. So if I don't have the gumption, I find it. Now, with all these things said, let's go back to that song we're about to sing. There is danger and death in delaying till tomorrow. I never want someone to become a Christian simply, totally, because they're scared of the alternative. That type of belief doesn't last. However, that's a part of it. The greater thing, though, is to realize what God offers, what God is willing to give. You may not understand it now, likely won't understand everything now, but God says eternally all things are going to work together for good. And it's believing that. And when I redeem the time today, and I get my life right with God today, God says you're where you need to be. And you can now approach my throne with confidence. So let me encourage you. Is there something you need to do in your life right now? Is there someone you need to deal with? Maybe you're on the outs with? Maybe is there something in your life where you've put other things before God? Am I talking to those who are not Christians at all, but yet understand? Take the admonitions this morning in the spirit of love. Don't delay. Don't be scared off either by all the folks in this room. If you want to become a Christian, not everybody has to watch. You can become a Christian like that Ethiopian eunuch did, as he and Philip went down into the water. Don't give yourself an out. Don't come up with a reason to say, I'd rather put it off till tomorrow. There's danger and death in delay. Wherever we are, let's make the commitment right here and now that we're going to redeem the time to be better, to be more spiritually minded, to be convinced and to trust that God can take us where we need to be. If you need to respond to His invitation this morning, won't you come while we stand and sing together?